Lovely. Thank you very much, James. And it's wonderful to be with you this morning. I'll just take my socks off so I feel more at home. And because these are my hands, my toes. And friends, I met James, the Reverend, way back about 4 years ago in Dromore. And then he contacted us about a year ago saying, "Brian, would you come and share?" And although I think at that time he was thinking I was still in the Isle of Man, but I'll be sharing a wee bit more about that in a wee minute or two. But it's lovely to be here in St. Columbus in Derry Volgay. It's great to be with you today. And my wife and I, we do a lot of traveling, and we're so thankful to God for all the opportunities we get to share. And especially the last 2 or 3 years, we've been going to Poland quite a bit. We've been going into prisons and schools and churches, and but my Polish isn't very good, is it, dear? But it's great. And this month we've got about 6 meetings, and there's about our 3rd or 4th one this month. So it's great to be with you, and thank you so much for coming to share a little bit of my story of God's goodness. And this morning, friends, I'm going to take you back 58 years ago. Back to 1961, because in that year, my mum went to the doctor and said, "Doctor, I think I might be pregnant again." My mum had already had 2 children, my big brother and my big sister. But you know, my mum had always suffered with what we call morning sickness. That means my mum was always very sick when she was having us. And you know, she went to the doctor and she said, "Doctor, can you give me anything for my sickness?" And you know, the doctor gave my mum this wonder tablet called thalidomide. And you know, my mum thankfully only took just 2 of those tablets. And because of those 2 tablets, friends, this morning, I was born with no arms in the Jubilee Hospital in Belfast. And you know, you can imagine when I came out of the womb, it was a shock. Do you know, when my big brother Alan was born, the midwife said to my mum, "Mrs. Galt, you've got a boy." And when my sister Patricia was born, "You've got a girl." But you know, when I came out of the womb, friends, there was a hush, there was a silence. And you know, I was taken away from my mum for many hours. And she said to me in later years, she said, "Brian, I thought you were dead." And then eventually I was brought to my mum after many hours. And she said, "Brian, what a relief. You're alive." But yes, friends, when she took the wee blanket off my wee shoulders, you can imagine it was a shock to my mum and to my dad. But you know, friends, this morning, I am so thankful that my mum and dad, they accepted me. Because I have learned that there's been nearly 10,000 babies all over the world were born like me. Some with no arms, some with no legs. And you know, for about 30%, 3,000 of those 10,000, the mums and dads found it too much. And the children were either adopted or put into institutions. Do you know, this morning, I am so thankful my mum and dad didn't take either of those options. Do you know, friends, we had a little pig farm in Ballyclare, 12 miles north of Belfast. And you know, when we got home to the farm, do you know, my mum was anxious about how the neighbours would react. Do you know, my mum said she felt safe going out to feed the animals. They never talked back. They never asked any awkward questions about why Brian had no arms. But you know, if any neighbours came up the lane, up to the farmhouse, my mum said her instinct, her reaction would be to pick me up, take me into the house before anybody saw me. But you know, one day, one of the neighbours, a lady called Lily Bell, came up the lane. And when she saw me for the first time, she said to my mum, "Isabel, is that Brian?" And you know, friends, in those days, I had lots of curly blonde hair. And she said, "Isn't Brian cute? Isn't he lovely?" And I still am. That's my story. And you know, for my mum, she never thought anybody would say anything nice about me. And you know, Lily Bell became a very dear and special friend to my mum in those weeks and months after I was born. Do you know, my mum, it took more than a year before she'd get answers because of why I had no arms, because of that tablet called thalidomides. But you know, Lily Bell was a good friend and she was a good listener. And I'm sure here in this fellowship, here St. Columbus, you know who the Lily Bells are, the good listeners. And I know my mum, with her times, she needed a shoulder to cry on. And you know, Lily Bell was there for my mum. And I remember, friends, when I got that wee bit older, I used to see Lily Bell come up the lane, up to the farmhouse. And you know, friends, I'd run out and with my chin, I'd grab her arm and I'd bring her into the house. And friends, I'd be sitting down and sometimes she had sweets. And you know, they had wrapping paper on them. And with my toes, friends, I could undo the wrapping paper and bring them up like this, the sweets up to my mouth, just like that. Just like that. And you know, Lily Bell would say to my mum, "Isn't that amazing? Isn't Brad clever what he could do with those toes?" And you know, my mum never thought she'd ever hear anybody say those words about me. You see, I loved Lily Bell when I saw her coming up that lane. But you know, friends, my mum was given some good advice. And the advice that my mum was given was not to do everything for me. You see, my mum could have dressed me and fed me and did everything for me. But she was advised that you'd have to stand back and to watch me struggling using these here, my toes. I say the only time these are my feet are when I walk. The rest of the time, they're my hands. And from my early age, friends, I'd be putting a spoon in between my toes to feed myself. And I had to lift my wee leg up onto the kitchen table. Well, friends, it's not natural to lift your leg up onto the kitchen table. And I used to get these awful pains and cramps in my legs. I used to say, "Mum, Dad, why do I have to lift my leg up onto the table?" You see, I looked at the animals on the farm, the pigs. They had no arms and they had no problems feeding themselves. And I thought to myself, if it's good enough for the animals, it's good enough for me. And friends, I used to stick my wee head down into the plate. And with my tongue, I used to lick up all the food so fast. And my big brother used to say, "That's not fair. If there's any seconds, Brian's plate's always licked first clean." And you know, he was not pleased with me. But you know, if any neighbours came around at mealtimes, Mum and Dad didn't have to say a word. They looked over to me, and I knew right away, friends, I had to get that wee leg with the spoon up onto the table. There were many challenges. But you know, my biggest challenge as a wee boy was when I was 2 and 3 months old. And we all recognize that handsome young man there? That's me, friends, when I was 2 and 3 months old. I don't know if you remember when you were 2 and 3 months old, but I was told I was going to Scotland to get my arms. And I thought I was going to get arms like my big brother and my big sister. But you know, Mum and Dad took me to the hospital. And after only a few hours, they said goodbye. And friends, I wouldn't see my mum and dad again for the next 10 weeks. And I didn't know what the word abandonment meant. But friends, that's how I felt emotionally. And you know, I was only at the hospital about a week when they put this plaster cast onto my chest. And when it hardened, they took it off and engineers made my first pair of arms. And my dear, we're really going quick here today. I usually talk for an hour and 20 minutes. I'm keeping it down to half an hour. But here's the arms that I would be wearing. And the arms didn't really change, friends, over the years. And even for when I was only 2 and a bit, friends, they were not like your arms. These were metal arms. We call them prosthetics. And they were heavy and they were cumbersome and they hurt. And you know, I had to learn to walk again when I had the arms on. How did they work? They had little pressure pads on the shoulders. And as I moved them up and down, the arms would go up and down, in and out. And a little strap across my chest, which kept the arms on. But also, friends, when I had food in the hook on a spoon, and I was just about bringing it up to my mouth, if I breathed out at the wrong time, the hook would open and close. So all the food would fall onto the table. So it was very frustrating. But you know, after 10 weeks, one day Mum and Dad came back. And I remember when my father came into the room, friends, I ran over and I jumped into his arms. But would I look at him? Nope, nope, nope. Friends, I was cross. Where had my father been for the last 10 weeks? When you're only 2.5, 10 weeks seemed forever. And my mum would come into the room and she would say, Brian, the first time I saw you and saw how sad you looked, I had to leave the room. I didn't want you to see the tears coming down my cheeks. But you know, friends, that day, Mum and Dad said the words I wanted to hear. They said, Brian, we'll come to take you home back to Ballyclare. And you know, as a wee boy, I went, yes, yippee. Mum and Dad still loved me. And you know, when we got back home to Ballyclare, word of mouth got round the community that Brian was back with his bionic arms. And some of the children came around to see me, and they would put their wee fingers in the wee hooks of the arms. And friends, I wouldn't let go. And their fingers were going blue. And then they were going home and tell their mums and dads how terrible Brian was with those arms. But you know, the professors in Scotland, before we left the first time, said to my mum and dad, try and get me to wear those metal arms for 8 hours every day. Friends, I have to be honest here today. If I had them on for 20 minutes a day, I thought it was 20 minutes too long. Because these here, my toes, I could do everything 10 times quicker. But you know, when I was 6.5 years of age, my family went for a holiday to the Isle of Man. And by that time, I had a younger sister, Gwen. We had a lovely holiday. But you know, I wasn't to know that that holiday had a big impact, a big impression upon my parents. Because in May 1970, we sold up the wee pig farm in Ballyclare, and we all moved over to the Isle of Man to live in 1970. And you know, it was no problem for my three siblings, my big brother and my two sisters, getting into a wee primary school in Douglas. Mum and Dad took me along to 4 schools, and they all said the same thing. We're sorry, Mr. and Mrs. Galt. There's no school in the Isle of Man that would accept your Brian. So my mum and dad had to make tough love decisions. Only now as I look back, I understand. It was decided I would have to come back here to Northern Ireland. I don't know if anybody here this morning has heard of a school in Belfast called Fleming Fulton School. A few heads are nodding, okay. Well, away back in 1970, there were 220 children at the school, and 40 of them were boarders. And they all came from all the 6 counties of Northern Ireland, plus one, me, from the Isle of Man. And friends, it meant for 9 months of the year, from the age of 8.5 till I was 17, I would be away from those that I loved, my family, in the Isle of Man. You can imagine, as a wee boy of 8.5, I was homesick. I missed my mum and dad and my family. But friends, now as a boarder at school, I could no longer cheat with the metal arms. Friends, I had to wear those arms up to 8 hours a day from Monday to Friday. And my shoulders would come out in all these blisters and weals and cuts and bruises. And I couldn't understand. Why did I have to wear these arms? It hurt so much. And sometimes, friends, I'd go up to good solid walls and I'd bash the arms against the walls so I didn't have to wear them. I hated them. And sometimes people ask me today, Brian, were you angry when you were a boy? And I have to be honest here today, and Derry Volge, the answer is yes. You see, when I lived in Ballyclare as a wee boy, the children around the community accepted me, Brian, the boy with no arms. But you know, in the Isle of Man in the summer months when I was 8, 9, 10 years of age, children there had never seen a boy with no arms before. And you know, some of the children Do you know, they were not very nice, because they'd be laughing at me, teasing me, saying not nice words, and someone would be knocking me over. And I couldn't understand why would children be so cruel to another child's. And friends, I did something I know I should never have done. To see the arms here in the picture here today, those arms have got a good right metal hook on them. And you know, once or twice in the summer months, I'd say to my mum and dad, I think I might put the arms on today. Friends, I had another motive. I was looking out for that boy or girl who had knocked me over or said not nice things. And you know, when they got within my reach, I used to go up to them and I used to go, boom! And friends, I would nearly knock them out. And I went home and I said, Mum, Dad, I've done something terrible. I said, what have you done? I said, I think I've knocked one of the children out with the right hook of the arms. They said, Brian, you must say sorry. I have to be honest here this morning. I didn't want to say sorry. I meant it at the time. But you know, I shouldn't have done it. And you know, I went and said sorry to the family for knocking their child out. Do you know, I shouldn't have done that. And also, I used to give out Glasgow kisses. I don't know if anybody here this morning's ever had a Glasgow kiss. But they're headbutts. You see, I don't know if you remember in the old, especially the older folks here today, remember the old vinyl records? Remember sometimes a needle would get stuck? Do you know, sometimes the children keep saying to me, Brian, why? Have you got no arms? And all I could say is my mummy took two tablets when I was in her tummy and it stopped my arm from growing. You see, the children wanted more answers, friends, and I had nothing more to say. And I knew how to lose friends when I was a boy. You see the picture up here today? I'm 10 going on 11 years of age in that picture. And friends, that was my lowest point when I was a boy. It was a time I remember saying, God, I don't like you, God, because you've made me different from the other boys and girls. Why do I have to struggle with these metal arms? Yes, I've got my toes, I can do things with my toes, but it takes me longer. And you know, at my lowest point, I remember saying, God, I wish I'd never been born. Isn't that sad to feel like that when you're 10, 11 years of age, not wanting to go on with my life? But I know that James, the minister here today, would not want me to finish on a sad note, would you, today? Nope. Definitely not. Because, friends, my 13th year, 1974, I call the glorious year in my life. In that year, two things happened that I want to mention this morning. The first one is this. One day, one of the teachers of school came into the classroom. She said, Brian, I've got some good news for you. Friends, I was racking my brains. What good news would you have? She said, Brian, the professors in Scotland, the physiotherapists and the occupational therapists at school have all come to the same decision. Brian, no longer do you have to wear your metal arms. Friends, I'm a wee bit deaf in my left ear. I said, pardon? She said, no longer do you have to wear your arms. Do you know that day? I went, yes, yippee, no more metal arms. Do you know that day the teacher took those arms off my wee shoulders? She put them in the cupboard. She locked them with the key. And I said, teacher, can I have the key for the cupboards? You see, I thought 3 months later, out again would come the old metal arms. Friends, I'm now 58 years of age. That's 45 years ago, and I've never seen those metal arms ever since. Isn't that great? Well, I think it is. But you know, something even better happened in my 13th year. Do you know, as a boarder at school, it was compulsory to go to church or go to chapel. And I have to be honest here this morning, I used to pretend I was sick come Sunday mornings. Friends, I was never sick on Saturday nights because match of the day was on, the football. And you know, the staff at school used to say, Brian's always in good form on Saturday nights. But not come Sunday morning. You see, friends, I was cross with God at that stage. But you know, I had a friend at school called Alan. And Alan was born with cerebral palsy, which meant that Alan's arms would wave about uncontrollably. He could walk, but a wee bit unsteady in his feet. And I used to think Alan was crackers or wired to the moon. Because Alan would not only go to church on Sunday morning, but he would go on Sunday night. And I said, Alan, you're daft. I'd be in the morning. That was enough for me. Well, you know, one Sunday night, Alan came back from church. And when he saw me, he said, Brian, guess what happened to me tonight at church? And I went, oh dear, what happened? He said, Brian, I've become a Christian. Jesus had forgiven me of all my sins. The Bible says that from conception, we're all sinners. And you know, at that time, I said, Alan, that's good for you having Jesus as your best friend and your savior. But friends, I didn't want to hear about Alan's God at that time. But you know, I am so thankful for my friend, Alan. Do you know, you can say you're a Christian, but what difference does it make in your life? Well, do you know, for Alan, in the days and weeks after he became a Christian, he began to pray for all the 40 children who were boarders by name. And sometimes I'd go past his bedroom and I'd hear him mention my name and his prayers. And I used to boil up inside and say, Alan, stop your prayer for me. I don't need your God. Do you know what Alan kept doing, friends? He kept on praying. He kept persevering, asking God to melt my heart, take away that anger. And you know, friends, I want to encourage each one of you here today at St. Columbus here in Derrybulgy, each one of you is to be an Alan. Be a prayer warrior and pray for those around you that they too, that God would touch their hearts and melt them and come to know and love Jesus. I thank God for Alan's perseverance. I'm aware of at least 9 of the 40 children became Christians. And you know who they all said had the major influence in them coming to Jesus? Alan. So I'm encouraging each one here today, be an Alan. Be a prayer warrior. And pray for your loved ones and your neighbors, especially coming up this Christmas season, that they too will come to see the light of the world, come to know Jesus as their Savior. Because, friends, about 8 months after Alan became a Christian, I remember about 10 o'clock at night one night saying to Alan, Alan, I'll never be good enough to get into God's heaven. And do you know what Alan said to me? He said, Brian, you've got it in one. You'll never be good enough. And you know, Alan shared a wee verse in the Bible, in the book of Romans chapter 3 and verse 23, where it says that we have all have sinned. We've all fallen short of God's righteousness or his standards. And not one of us here today by good works and deeds alone can get into God's heaven. And I remember Alan said to me, Brian, there's only one way you can have peace with God and acceptance and forgiveness, and that is through Jesus. He quoted that wee verse many as we have learned at a Sunday school there in John chapter 14 and verse 6, where Jesus says, I am. I am means the all-sufficient one. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can have a relationship with God in heaven except through me, Jesus. And friends, at that time when I was 13, I was desperate. I knew Alan had a joy and a peace that I didn't have. And friends, I wanted it. And that night at 10 o'clock at night, I remember saying, Alan, do I have to wait the Sunday morning? You see, friends, I thought God was only in church buildings. Alan said, Brian, he's here tonight at school. And friends, that night just after 10, I cried out prayers just talking to Jesus. I said, Jesus, would you forgive me? For the kids are knocked out with the old metal arms. The Glasgow kisses, the times God have cursed you and blasphemed you and been angry with you. Friends, I just poured it all out that night. And God heard my cry. He forgave me. He accepted me. You know, my mum and dad accepted me in the first weeks of my life. And here at the age of 13, my Heavenly Father accepted me. Isn't that wonderful? And Alan said, Brian, in the days to come, share with others what happened tonight. That 45 years ago. And friends, when I was 13, my reading ability was that of a six-year-old. And yet by the time I was 17, I left school with 7 O-levels. Today we call them GCSEs. And no teacher or anybody at school thought I would pass any exams. Friends, I believe that Jesus helped me through my teenage years to get down to my studies and to apply myself. I have to move on, mate. We'll go on to the next one. When I was 17, I headed off to college in Coventry. Sometimes we talk about being sent to Coventry. I went to college in Coventry. And when I was only there 2 months, up the driveway came a motor car, my car. My first wee car was a mini car 41 years ago. And you say, Brian, how do you drive a car? Do you know today they're talking about these driverless cars where you don't touch the steering wheel? Friends, I've been doing it for 41 years. I have a plate on the floor. It's an automatic car, and I have a dinner plate on the floor, and as I turn that plate around with my toes, the big steering wheel goes around at the same time, automatic. And I have a little box of tricks on the floor, a bit like your remote control for your television, infrared receiver button. It's got 12 buttons on it. It does the lights and the wipers and the horn and everything. And friends, I had 12 one-hour lessons, and I passed first time. Isn't that great? There was one word, I know there's some young people here today, there was one word I was never allowed to use. Never say the word can't or cannot, but try. Look to your potential and not your limitations, especially when you have Jesus living in your hearts. Do you all see the words up here today? It says, get ready to pray. And if there's anybody here in our gallery today and you're struggling to pray, friends, I can get you praying. What do you do is you come for a wee spin in my car. I'll get you praying. You'll be saying, Lord, that man's crazy. How he drives that car with his toes. May, how much has your prayer life improved?
About 20,000.
20,000 fold. And are you joking, dear? Definitely not. You see, I lived in the Isle of Man for 36 years, from 1970 to 2006. And then we came back here. We're now living in Brisheen, just outside Ballymena. And that's where we've come today. And the next wee picture, I know my time is quickly going, but there we are. Do you know, I used to wonder, friends, would I ever get married? Would a girl ever see beyond the man with no arms and see Brian the man? And do you know, when I was in my late teens and early 20s, I'd fallen in love with different girls. A girl, God kept saying, Brian, that's not the girl for you. And you know, my heart was broken. I didn't want to get hurt again. But you know, in 1997, May came over to the Isle of Man to work in the bank. And at that time, I was working with 2 senior colleagues in a wee Baptist church in Douglas. And my role in the church was pastoral visiting. Do we all know what pastoral visit is? When the minister comes around for a wee visit, and he might get a wee cup of coffee and maybe a wee cake or scone or something. Well, I went round to see May. And you know, May got out the coffee and the Kit Kats. And my heart was going bubbly, bubbly, bop. I hope all our hearts are going bubbly, bop today. Do you know, I said, Lord, this is a lovely girl. But friends, I was shy. Would you believe that, Pastor? And I, you know, I was talking to May, but not about my feelings. And you know, 18 months later, I remember saying to May, May, what's in your heart? And what did you say to me, May?
I said, what's in yours?
What's in my heart? I said, May, I've fallen in love with you. What did you say to me, dear?
I said, me too.
Pardon?
Me too.
Me too. Friends, I'm deaf in that left ear. I had to hear it again. Me too. Friends, I had to wait till I was 38 to find my wee treasure. Isn't that wonderful? And you know, God knew, friends, that I would need a helpmate, a companion, and also a wee shirt tucker in her, because I'm not able to tuck my shirt into my trousers. God says, Brad, you don't need to worry anymore about getting your shirt tucked in. And you know, my wife and I, we've traveled over 34 different countries around the world, as far as Australia and Japan, Korea, 6 times to Brazil, North America, Africa, Europe. Isn't that amazing? Share my testimony, what I'm doing here with you today, to encourage others. And God knew I couldn't do it on my own. I needed my wife, May, as my helper and companion. And do you know, over the years, I'm conscious my time is probably already gone, but friends, I've written a book. This is my life story. It came out in the year 2000. Why did I write my book? Sadly, in Brazil, they still use the drug thalidomide, not for morning sickness, but for leprosy. And my wife, May, and I, we've been out 6 times to Brazil, and we've been able to support 146 families with children with disabilities, and many of them because of the drug thalidomide. And all the royalties from my story, it came out in February 2000, and we give God all the glory. My book is now into its 23rd reprint. And all the royalties and the profits from my book are helping kids, not only in Brazil, but in other countries around the world. Isn't that wonderful? And we've got copies here today, haven't we, dear?
Yes.
And the books, friends, I know here in Derry, Bulgy, you all like a bargain, don't you? We live in Brisheen, near Ballymena, and they all like bargains up there. And, the books, we've got some here today with us, and they're normally £9.99 each. And friends, if you get one from me today, it's still £9.99 each. But for an extra penny, for £10, you can have 2 books. Have you all got friends? No?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, right?
At least I have.
Yeah, James has got a friend. Do you know, my longing is not only do you get a wee book for yourself, but get one for our friends. And I've already signed up, I've already done Blue Peter style inside. I put in them all, blessings, Brian. And I'm happy to put your name, our friend's name. And obviously, we're coming up to Christmas. If you want to get some early Christmas boxes, come and see me after. I'd be happy to put Happy Christmas 2019, if that's what you want in your wee book. So, May, what do we accept, May?
Cash.
May's a banker.
No plastic.
But, you know, we will take, if you come today and you've got no money, don't worry. May will take down your name on a piece of paper and we'll leave it with the minister and a later date. Next time you see him, we'll settle up for the wee books. Another wee thing I've got here today is a wee DVD. This came out about 8 years ago and we've given out 79,000 of these. And you know, friends, this is 60 minutes of me sharing my story in the DVD. And how many have we got here today, May?
200!
And May, how many are we taking home?
None.
Because friends, there's about 80, 90, maybe near 100 people here today. That means each family, each person can take 2 each, take them home. Because I know you've all got friends, and it's coming up to Christmas time. It's an opportunity to give them out. So we're not going to be taking any of them home. And May, how much are they?
They're free.
Pardon?
Free.
Free! So friends, take some of them and use them. And something else we've just brought out in the last 5-6 months is a little gospel track. How could you cut my story down to 3 pages? But anyway, here we've got these here that just come out recently. And we've got about 600 of these here today. So that means everybody can take at least 5 or 6 of them each. Put them in with your Christmas cards and have a few in your handbag or in your coat pocket or whatever. And opportunities to give them out to be a blessing and encouragement to others. How much are they, May?
Free.
They're free too. And we're not going to be taking any of them home. We're going to leave whatever's left over. I'm leaving them with the minister here at the church for you to spread them around your community. So that's a wee plug for that. I've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. Okay, quickly, mate. These are just some of the children. As I say, we helped 146 families in Brazil. There's little Miriam there in Brazil. She was born with no hands and wee short legs. And there she is. And we got her that little scooter. Isn't that wonderful? And the next one, May. There's Franciela, a very typical thalidomide disability. Wee short arms at her shoulders and wee short feet at her hips. And Franciela and her mum came 12 hours in a bus to São Paulo. the biggest city in South America. 21 million people live in São Paulo. And she got this specially adapted electric wheelchair. And the next one, please. There's little Moses there in Recife on the coast there in Brazil. And we work in partnership with the Brazilian Thalidomide Society in Brazil. And Claudia Maximino, the president, said, Brian May, could we buy this family a house? I don't know how much houses are here in Lisbon, but you know, for £900, friends. The next picture, dear, look at that. Do you know, it might look like your garage, friends, but you know, for that family, that was a mansion, a palace. Because before that, they were living in a shack, in a tin hut. And they couldn't believe at that time we were living in the Isle of Man. They couldn't believe we came all that way to be able to help that family. And the next one, May. I don't know if anybody's heard of this lady, Johnny Erickson Tada. She's a lady who was paralyzed in a diving accident when she was 17 years of age. She's an American lady, and she's written about 30 Christian books over the years, and she's done the foreword from a book. And Johnny has got a UK ministry called Through the Roof. Are we all familiar with the story in the Bible of the man who was paralyzed, had four friends who took him down through the roof to meet Jesus? Well, the ministry is called Through the Roof, and the next one, May. Over the last 8-9 years, we've raised enough money to get over 1,100 wheelchairs to help folks in all these countries in Africa, as well as in Kosovo and Ukraine. Isn't that a great story? And the next one, May. Another wee project that we're involved in is these here, when I'm holding my toes here. This is a Bible. Joe was reading today from the scriptures, and we all can read the Bible. But sadly, in African countries, many disabled boys and girls do not go to school and cannot read or write. So what this is another wee project that we're doing is that they can listen to the stories of Jesus. Solar powered, powered by the sun, S-U-N. And these here cost £20 each. And if you're any good at maths, you can work out at 670 odd at £20 each. It's a lot of money. But people keep giving us £10, £5, £200, whatever. Say, Brian, put that towards your solar power project so that boys and girls and adults with disabilities can hear the stories of Jesus. And in closing, May, I'm going to finish here today with Psalm 139. Verse 14. It says up there, I praise you, God, because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Friends, for the first 13 years of my life, I was cross and angry with God. But you know, I am so thankful that 45 years ago, my best friend Alan shared the bestest thing he could have done with another friend. He introduced me to Jesus. Isn't that wonderful? Friends, I can say to each one of you today that I am complete. Did you hear that? I'm complete. I'm not perfect, am I, May?
No.
Nope. She said, I'm not perfect. You know, I'm a sinner saved by grace. But friends, I am complete. Yes, friends, I've got no arms, but I've got Jesus. Friends, I would prefer to have no arms and have Jesus living in my heart than have my arms and not to know Jesus. In closing today, my challenge in closing is this. Are you complete in him? Do you know him? Do you love him? Personally, have you come to that time as I did 45 years ago, when I cried out to God, and God heard my cry, heard my prayer, and came into my heart. And if you're here today and you don't know Jesus personally as your Savior and your personal friend, I know that the minister, Reverend James Boyd here, would be delighted, and other leaders in the fellowship, be delighted, friends, in the days, even today, in the days to come, to talk to you more, to pray with you, to give you literature, things that would help you, so that you too can come to know and to love this Jesus that touched my heart 45 years ago. The Bible says that Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. And he's longing to come into your hearts. If you say, God, I'm here. Come in today. Come in to stay. God bless you. Thank you.